Hello. Well, I'm happy. I'm very happy to be here with you. I almost said good afternoon, but when I look at the list of people here, I see that it is afternoon some places, the wee small hours of the morning other places. And so just hello. I'm glad to be here with you. I come here, as always and everywhere, I come here to speak together, to consider together, and reflect together on the practice of self-inquiry. This is not spiritual. I don't have a lot of interest in spiritual matters. It is self-inquiry, that is. Self-inquiry is eminently practical and has there's no value to self-inquiry in spiritual understanding. So I don't come here to talk about spiritual things. My own experience with self-inquiry began in a desperate effort to understand and receive what it was that Ramana Maharshi was offering to the world, because I found no satisfaction or relief from misery and suffering anywhere else. But I don't come here to talk about Ramana Maharshi either. Ramana Maharshi, after all, is dead and gone and can be of no help to us now. The value of what Ramana has given us is incalculable. But it's not Ramana, it's you. And what Ramana has given us is this break from all of the swamp of spirituality in which we have mired ourselves for thousands of years, seeking desperately to come to some resolution of what seems to be the hopeless misery of human life. Come to some reconciliation of what seems to be the irreconcilable heartbreak of human life. And what he has given us in this regard is simple, direct, practical, and it is simply, and it is based upon the insight that is common to pretty much all spiritual understandings themselves, and that insight is that we are not who we think we are, and that's the problem. The problem isn't that we're good people or bad people, or that we have good understanding or poor understanding, or we have good thoughts or bad thoughts. The problem is that we are not who we think we are. The problem is not in those things that we believe ourselves to be, but in the fact that what we believe ourselves to be, we are not. So, it may well be that simple and straightforward and unspiritual investigation into our own nature may reveal what all of the spiritual utterances have been trying to say, but no spiritual utterances can remove from us the false belief that we are these lives, that we are these spiritual seekers, even that we are enlightenment or consciousness or empty awareness or love. These are all beliefs about who we are. These are all stories we tell as to what I am. The solution is to rid ourselves of all belief about what we are. And the great practical, radical gift of Ramana is the recognition of what we really already know, which is that this is quite simple. The only solution to false belief about what I am is the truth of what I am. And since I am always here, truth of what I am is always available to me. It doesn't require lifetimes of practice. It doesn't require merit. It doesn't require transmissions. It doesn't require renunciation or no renunciation. It only requires we turn our natural, inherent intelligence to the question, what am I, really? Not what the stories about me are, but what am I, really? And in so doing, destroy this false belief about what we are, whatever that belief is. I have, in recent times, become fond of saying that the problem is a false belief that we are our lives. It's not because the belief that we are our lives, it's because the belief is false. So that if we substitute the belief that we are Buddha mind or consciousness or eternal love or eternal life, the effect is the same. It's a continuation of misery and suffering, of fearfulness and anxiety, and of this internal aggression and warfare. It seeks to destroy whatever it is that contradicts what I believe myself to be. My only goal, my sole purpose and that my work is to, insofar as I am capable of doing so, to persuade or trick or wrestle to the ground everyone that I meet and everyone I talk to simply look at who you are directly. Without names, without thoughts, prior to names, prior to thoughts, what are you really? Without reference to the spiritual stories and descriptions about what you are, despite all those spiritual stories and descriptions, what are you really? That's all my work is. That's all I want in life, is that everyone I come across, I am somehow able to get them to look directly, without mediation, at what they are, what you are. Even if what you are is bad news, just to look at yourself. Now, it seems that this that I've just been trying to do is one of a couple of things that I end up doing in my meetings with people, one of a couple of subjects, I guess, or topics that I come back to again and again. And this particular one is trying to clarify for you what it is that I am offering and what it is that I am wanting to accomplish in this meeting with you. So to make myself as clear as I can, what it is that I am trying to accomplish here with you and accomplish everywhere, everyone that I speak with, is only this, to persuade you and get you to stop for one moment and look at what you are, to engage yourself in an investigation, in a devoted investigation, to the question, what am I? To find some way to bring to bear your common sense and your natural native intelligence to the problem of seeing directly what I am. And the reason that there is a problem connected with this is seems strange since, I mean, here you are, you're not absent, you're not missing, you're here. Accessible to yourself. But it turns out that once this investigation begins, it's possible for many problems to come up and be imagined and be talked about and be wondered about and so forth. What I want all to do is not find some formula or some magic key or some secret method to come to a direct meeting with themselves, but to see that you must do this for yourself. You absolutely must do this for yourself. And all you have at your disposal as tools in this effort to see what you are is your natural, inherent intelligence and your common sense. And that doesn't sound very spiritual, but like I said, I'm not a very spiritual guy. So what I want is to persuade you to look for yourself and to use all of your intelligence and common sense to serve that investigation. Now, the point of looking for yourself is not in order to even learn or understand what you are. The point of looking, and it's absolutely not that. It's not in order to confirm that you are eternal love. It's not in order to confirm that you are Buddha mind. It's not in order to disprove that you are Buddha mind or eternal love. It's not in order to satisfy you that yes, you are indeed entitled to eternal life. It's not in order to dissuade you from the idea that you will have eternal life. It is only to see the truth of what you are, and as a result of seeing that truth, all false belief about what you are eventually destroyed. And that's the point of the exercise. That's the only point of self-inquiry, is the side effect of looking at yourself, which is the destruction of the idea that you are your life or anything else for that matter. The destruction of the idea, the belief, that you are anything that can be said about you. The destruction of that idea in the stark simplicity of seeing the reality of what you are again and again, as often as you can. So that's what I have to offer. The work of looking for yourself and the result of destroying the false belief, whatever that false belief may be. And what I can tell you the result of this is an end to misery and suffering in your life, an end to the engine of fearfulness and anxiety that drives us all, sometimes big, sometimes tiny little murmur in the background. But this fearfulness and anxiety drives us all and drives this internal warfare that says, I must be this and not that. I must have this and not that. And that internal warfare is the source of all of it, all of the horror of human behavior throughout the ages. In the course of speaking about self-inquiry and the investigation, one of the things that comes up most often stems from what seems to be the difficulty of seeing yourself. I mean, how do you know you're looking at reality? How do you know what direction to look? How do you know what you're looking for? This may seem silly to you if you haven't tried it, but once you actually try to see what you are rather than think about what you are, you'll discover that these things are pain. How do I know? What am I? How do I feel? What if this is What if what it is that I am seeing is just more lie? How do I tell the difference? Where do I look? Where do I turn? What do I do? How do I conduct this inquiry? How do I look for myself? How do I satisfy myself? And the truth is that there's nothing whatsoever that I really can say to be of much help to you in this. Because as I told you, it's something you have to figure out for yourself. You really do. You have to look for yourself. You really do. You have to use your own intelligence and so forth. But I can tell you this, that all the time, whenever anything is going on, there are a couple elements to it. In any situation, there are a few discrete, discernible elements to any circumstance or situation in which you find yourself, whether it's the difficulty in living your life or meeting your responsibilities or getting what you want or looking for what you are. There is the situation itself, which consists of all its components. A person, in the case of self-inquiry, a so-called person who wants to be free from misery and suffering and who wants to see, in order to find out whether there's any truth to this, wants to see if they can see what they are in order to find out whether seeing what they are actually will have the effect of the reconciliation and the resolution that we so seek. And there's all these thoughts about how the investigation should be conducted and how it should not be conducted, and there is also, as part of the situation, is all these thoughts about spiritual reality and what it means and how it impinges on this really crazy idea that I should look at myself, how the philosophical and spiritual matters seem to deny that this is even possible. There are the distractions of ordinary life. There are the memories of what you were doing earlier that was so wrong, the expectation of what you'll be doing in the future. All of this playing and spinning around the central determination to find out how it is that I can see myself. Am I really? Am I this thought? Am I this feeling, this kind of energy in my chest? Am I this energetic feeling in the back of my head? What am I? Am I, where do I look? What am I to do? Now, over the years, I've come to use mostly just a kind of simple trickery to try to surprise those with whom I meet. And trick them into a glimpse of this reality, because, see, the thing about the reality is that reality is always here. You, which are reality, is always here. And the actual fact of the matter is that since you are always here, there really is never a time when you are not seeing yourself. So I try to employ some trickery or some, you know, word stuff in order to surprise, take by surprise the people I'm speaking with so that they can get a glimpse of the reality and see that it is always here and actually easy to see, not hard. But the tricks that I use are not the thing itself. When I say to you, are you here? Can you deny that you are here? Are you certain you are here? Look and see what that certainty is. Look and see what makes you so certain that you exist. When I say these things, I'm really not describing anything at all. I'm really not like there is this experience that occurs within you of certainty of being here. It's really nothing to that at all. What I'm trying to do is take you by surprise and trick you into catching a glimpse of the actual reality of what you are. And you know, they have very limited usefulness because they depend on surprise. And of course, once I have spent enough time talking about these things in a broad enough venue like this worldwide satsang, then kind of everybody's on to me, and now everybody's trying to look for the certainty that they exist, and of course everybody has an idea of what that is, when it isn't that at all. It's the trick. It's the catching you by surprise. What I want you to do is see yourself. You're here. That's for sure. And what is that? To be here. Not what you think about being here, but really, what is it to be here? But here's the deal. In every situation, in every circumstance, in the circumstance in which we now find ourselves, with you sitting there listening patiently to me, and me talking to you about how easy it is to see what you are, and maybe you even feel like it is easy to see what you are, and then you try to do it, and maybe you even feel like you do it, but then in retrospect you wonder whether you really had it or didn't have it. In every situation like that, there are a couple of discrete, discernible components. There is all of that going on. There is my voice in your ear. There is your hearing of my voice. There is all the thoughts that gather around the things that I'm saying. There is the what may be a rising desire to see whether there's any truth to what I'm talking about. All those things are the components that make up the characteristics, the apparatus that is the situation. If you sit down after this meeting and be quiet and turn your attention inward, if you, you know, calm yourself and settle the thoughts and so forth, and turn your attention inward diligently seeking for something that is certainly you, the same situation applies. There is the circumstance, which is you sitting down and enacting the determination to see if there's anything to this. There is the looking, the attention, the turning of attention, the direction of attention here and there and the other place, looking for some object that may feel like you. And that is you. There's you, who is, in these circumstances, the seer of it all. You. So here's the deal. If you will, whenever you can, look for the seer, you will find the truth. In every circumstance is the seeing, the seeing, and the seer. If you will look for the seer, your attention, you will find the truth. It's not there. But I want you to find the truth. I don't want you to find the truth in order that you can revise and make it more satisfactory story of what you are. I want you to find the truth for the sake of seeing what you are, for the sake of destroying any false belief about what you are. And there is nothing about the method itself that will do that. It is the looking does the work. And if you will look for the seer, you will find the truth. And it is those moments of looking that does the work. And the work is not the revision of the story of you. The story of you is constantly being revised. But that's not the work we're about here. The work is the seeing of you, which destroys the lie that you are something else. Now, you know, it's now the case that in order to use something other than voice to ask me questions and so forth, you need to send me an email. And the reason for that, we've gone through, and I don't think we need to go through that again. And I received an email from somebody. I don't think it's here because I don't see his name here. But I'm going to respond to it anyway. It's from a man named Brian. And he says, I would be most grateful if John could comment on a question during the worldwide satsang this week if time and opportunity arises. Time and opportunity is always going to arise, because I'll usually do these right now before we get started. My question is this. The individual self we believe to be a separate entity living a life with past and future is nothing more than a complete illusion. Therefore, John, who exactly is it that takes the medicine so that over time all will be well? Does this action not imply a process and reinforce the very idea that there is, after all, a separate individual who thinks that it can do this with view to gaining a reward in the future? How so, when no one exists in the first place, and we already are that? Yeah, how so indeed? You see, the point of the investigation into reality is not to gain a greater understanding of reality, nor is it to confirm the conviction that the individual self that we believe to be a separate entity living a life is nothing more than a complete illusion. We are not seeking to know or learn anything about an individual self that is a complete illusion, or about a separate individual that is inexistent to begin with. I mean, if we already know that, then we already know that the nature of the separate individual is illusory and inexistent. And the truth is that there is no way in which an inexistent entity can do anything, much less investigate its own nature. So all this is kind of beside the point, because it's not the individual self that can do anything. It's not the individual self that we're seeking to learn about. It's you. And no matter how illusory or inexistent the individual self might be, you are here. It's you who asked this question. It's you who see all of this. These spiritual viewpoints about the inexistence of separation and the inexistence of individual entities and the illusory nature of life and so forth, these are spiritual understandings that have some limited validity, but no more validity than your own understanding of reality. Nothing whatsoever can be said about you. Nothing. Not that you are existent or inexistent. Not that you are illusory or real. Nothing can be said about you. All of creation, the entirety of the cosmos, every thought, every opinion, every understanding, every ignorance, every lack of understanding, every thought put forward about the nature of things, every star, every planet, every cloud of dust, every moment in time, all of creation, all of it, and all of its glory and complexity and contradiction and all of it, constitutes an attempt to say something about you, about reality. It is an ongoing, continuous, spontaneous, chaotic effort to say something about reality. And it includes the idea that life is an illusion and that there is no separate individual. It also includes the idea that life is real and separation is the nature of life. None of this, none of it, says anything about you. None of it. And the fact remains that no matter how compelling might be the spiritual understandings about emptiness and inexistence and illusion and Leela and all of that, no matter how compelling those ideas are, that there is no one here, that nothing is, and so forth, here you are, being moved and affected by these ideas and concepts. Here you are, just as you have always been, you, looking for what's real. Here you are, unchanged. You exist. You see, if there is such a thing as a separate self, an individual self, that separate individual self can't do anything. It can't think, want, desire, act, investigate, anything. Can't do anything. Inert. So, I'm not speaking to that individual self. I'm speaking to you. I'm not suggesting that. There is, The other part of this is when Brian says, does this action not imply a process and reinforce the very idea that there is, after all, a separate individual that thinks and so forth? Well, I don't care if it reinforces that idea. The point of it is not to rid ourselves of the idea that there's a separate individual that thinks it can do this. The point is to rid ourselves of the belief that we are that separate individual. And only the truth can do that. We're not trying to dispose of false ideas about the nature of separate existence. We're trying to dispose of the false belief we are other than what we are. And whatever comes out of that is fine. You may, in the absence of this belief that you are whatever it is, whatever belief is playing in your mind, the absence of this belief, you may find yourself singing great hymns of joy and glory and poetry and so forth. You may celebrate the separate entity. You may think that separation is a gift of God, that without separation there could not be this wonder that we have, this glory of being able to look out our windows and see the sky of the drama, the intense pleasure and juiciness of being embodied. Or you may sing glories of no separate individual, no individual self. That's all beside the point. The point is, what are you? Right now, here, what are you? Look and see, what are you? It's not hard. It is really not hard. It is much easier to do than say. Look and see. Look for the seer. When there is within you a desire to be free of all the confusion, don't look for freedom from the confusion. Look for the one who is seeing all of that desire and confusion. And if you look for the seer, you will find the truth. And you return there again and again. And the day will come when you will, to your great surprise, discover that there is no problem here. I am not at stake here. You know, I always start out these meetings, whether here or in person, I always start out with the idea that this time I'm going to say it really clear and right to the point and without any beating about the bush or confusion and so forth. And, of course, never do I do that. Never. One more time, let me say this. I am here to offer to you my experience, my help, my guidance, and my determination to have you undertake the investigation into the nature of what you are, the direct investigation into the nature of what you are, in order that you will be finished with any false belief about what you are. What happens in your life before, during, and after that is not what I'm here for. I'm here to show you how easy it is to be finished with any lie about your nature. And it's my experience and my conviction that when that lie is gone, you will be very glad that it's gone. That's it. That's pretty much all I have to offer. Okay. I'll be happy to talk to anybody who wants to talk to me. I'm happy to be here with you, and so I'm just going to stop talking now and wait and see if you want to talk to me.
Birgit is calling from Richmond, California.
Hello, John. I'm happy to speak to you.
Hello, Birgit. I'm very happy to speak to you, too. What can I have for you?
I just have one question about the process, and how do you know when the belief is gone?
When misery and suffering and anxiety and fearfulness are gone, the belief is gone. You know, you don't even know the belief here, and it's leaving sometimes takes quite a while. sometimes not, sometimes yes. You will know that the belief is gone when you are no longer engaged in an internal warfare within your own life, when you are no longer finding it necessary to hold your larger thoughts and so forth at arm's length in order to be sure that they are acceptable. You'll know that the belief is gone when you don't think about it anymore.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Is that helpful?
Yes, very helpful. Because my anxiety and fear and warhead and all these things, they are gone. So thank you.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that. Thank you. This is something that I also have never quite figured out how to speak about, is this business about how do you know when the work is done? And, you know, because in most traditions they have an event that you're looking for, like enlightenment. And I don't have much trouble with enlightenment or like awakening or realization or God knows what else. But here in reality, here in the arms of a sweet sanity, there is no such event that we're looking for. Here in reality, what we are looking for is an end to be looking for things, is an end to the warfare, is an end to the alienation from my own life. So I tell you this, it's often the case that belief is gone before you know it. And that's pretty much the best I can do with that.
We have George calling from Ashland, Oregon.
Hi, George. What can I do for you? It's good to see you here.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can now.
I forgot about the hotkey. It's okay. I'm in now.
Okay, George. So what can I do for you?
Well, John, I heard what you said before. You know, it's amazing. You talked a long time, and then you apologized about it. And, you know, I don't care, John. I am so grateful to you just for being there and what you've done. I mean, I'm telling you, my life changed since you were here in Ashland, and for some reason, grace allowed me to just glimpse the truth of what you were talking about. I didn't have anything to do with it, and I don't know that you did, but it happened when you and I were in the same space, and I'm grateful for that little shift. It's just a little shift, but it's huge, and I really appreciate you for that.
Well, you're very welcome. You know, really, we spend a lot of our time in the spiritual world looking for shifts. And the actuality is that the shift is minuscule, the shift between fearfulness and an end to fearfulness. It is minuscule. Because the only shift that occurs is seeing that you are already seeing everything you've been trying to see all your life. And that's not that big a deal. The great ones have all told us from the very beginning that, as Brian said in his email, we are already always that which we see. And that being the case, it's to be expected that any shift that takes place as a result of looking at reality would actually be quite small, but huge in effect. So I'm really happy to hear this, George. You're very welcome.
Well, it's a great pleasure to be with you. I mean, mine still comes up. One time, excuse me, getting over a cold here, I heard what supposedly Nisargadatta said, that when you look within and see that you are nothing, this is wisdom. When you look without and see that you are everything, this is love. And I thought that was a very beautiful thing. And conceptually, came to my mind, well, I've handled step one, but step two still has to fall into place. And I could get concerned about that, you know, or I could not. And when I hear you, you are always that steady voice to remind me to stop following these flights of mind, you know, and just to be easy and continually go back to the place, to continually shift tension back, you know, whenever it's possible. And it's been really a wonderful resource. At least that's what my mind tells me. I don't know, my mind seems to be cooperating quite a bit with this whole process. And anyway, I wanted to thank you for that.
Well, that's really great news. And, you know, the thing about, actually, I just read that quote the other day somewhere. It popped up from Nisargadatta. And the thing about that, of course, is that takes us, because we think we know what it means to be everything, and we think we know what it means to be nothing. But, and we think that that's a state that we have to attain. But the fact is, that has always been the case. There is never a time when you have not been love, and never a time when you have not been what Nisargadatta calls nothing. And there's never been a time that you've not known that. And even the flights of mind where you take off and begin to worry, maybe you've got one thing and not the other and whatever, you know, and obviously it's pretty mild for you. But even those times, you are not touched by it. You're not changed by it. You don't become other than what you are because you became interested in some flight of fancy playing out in your mind. You are still the same. And thank God for that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I, for many years, I was very, very interested in experiences. And the form of meditation that I did encouraged you to look toward your experiences for confirmation as to how well you were doing along the spiritual path. Well, it's interesting. I for a long time, I'd be very jealous of other people's experiences. And just this morning, I was sitting with Lorraine and I were sitting with another couple having breakfast, and he was the young man was describing his experiences with his guru. He had some guru, I don't know, remember his name, but and he was going to India, and he was wearing his beads, and he was talking about these long, wonderful experiences. And the new mantra he has, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I used to have quite a bit of judgment about that. And instead, I just looked at him, and all I saw was sweetness. Now, this was a sweet young man who was just opening his heart and following his path, whatever it is, you know. And I glanced around the room, and I was just taken in by the beauty of everyone in the room. It was just everyone was doing their thing, whatever the thing is. You know? It was just happening. It was just happening, and it was beautiful. And I didn't have to do anything about it. All I had to do was relax a little bit, you know?
Oh, I know very well. Yes, that's very wonderful. You see, that is the coming to the fore of your nature is love without condition. Love without condition really doesn't care. It doesn't choose that this is what's lovable and this is what's not. It sees everything with equanimity. And that's, I've always been your nature. Always. That's what you are. And the revelation of that in the actual life is a sign of the effectiveness of the inquiry. It's a sign of the weakening and diminishing of the power of the belief that you are at stake in this life, that you are something other than the reality of what you are. So this is very good news, and it's wonderful to hear this from you. I'm very happy, George.
Well, I'm happy too, and I wish the greatest. I continually send my blessings to the to your and Carla's ministry, whatever you want to call it. But I'm so happy for you both. I'm going to get off now and let somebody else speak.
Okay, give my love to Ray.
Will do.
And anybody else you see in Ashland that knows me.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of us here who just have the warmest hearts, Melanie Marks and a whole bunch that just, when I mention your name, they just glow. And Larry and Candace and all those folks. I don't know why they're not online. It's just maybe just a technical problem, but you're in their heart and they love you. So we're looking forward. Maybe you'll be here again, and maybe not. But in spirit, we're together.
Maybe so, maybe not. Maybe we'll be there, maybe we won't. But we're always together, and we give all those folks our deepest love and appreciation for their good thoughts about us. Okay.
Will do. Bye, John.
Is there any other among you who would like to speak with me? We don't have to stay.
Santa Raj is calling from Bangalore, India. Santa Raj, in order to speak, remember to turn your microphone on because it is now turned off, okay?
Well, I would love to be able... Oh, there you are. Now you're there.
Hi, John. You can hear me?
Hello, Santa Raj. What you're going to have to do, yeah, there you go, is take your hand off the talk button when I'm speaking. So I'm happy to see you here, and what can I do for you?
John, now, why is it apparently very hard to really see?
You find what to be really hard?
Really look at what I am, what we are.
What is the difficulty?
It just, it's apparent, like I said, it's apparently very hard. In the sense, it seems to slip away the very next moment of trying to really look at who you are.
Could you repeat that? Trying to do what to the moment?
Trying to really see who I am.
Yes, and what I'm wondering is what's difficult about that, or is it try to describe to me what your difficulty is. I mean, you're not absent, are you? You are present there.
Yes. That's very clear, but it's very momentary, or it kind of doesn't last, and then you get a sense of not really looking. And then you tend to look at it, but then it kind of slips away.
And why is that a problem? Do you think that the purpose of the inquiry is to stay forever in a state of attention focused on some experience of reality?
I really don't think that way, John, but it just happens like that. I tend to be trying to see who I am, really, and then I just get lost somewhere, and then again, you know, I get back to really seeing who I am. So I kind of don't get the anchor, for lack of any other word, to hold on to and know that, yes, here I am, really looking at what I am.
Aha, uh-huh, yes. That's kind of what I thought you were saying. The The point here is not to, let me see, how can I say this? It's not to kind of get what you are. It's not to kind of extract permanent knowledge of what you are. That's not the point of the inquiry. And the reason it's not the point of the inquiry is because the truth is, as you will see in time, the truth is that you are always already knowing what you're trying to know. That it is your nature to be always seeing yourself, always knowing the reality of what you are. The knowing itself is the reality of what you are. So when it is entirely an artifice when we deliberately turn our attention seeking to see the reality of what we are, since there's never a moment when we don't. The point of the exercise is to just destroy this belief that you are this life, this person, this individual, the seeker, the one who wants, the one who doesn't get, and so forth. It's not in order to make you what you are. It's in order to rid you of the idea that you are other than that. So whatever happens in the process of the inquiry, well, it doesn't stay. It's an experience. It comes and it goes. It arises and it disappears. The inquiry itself is a spontaneous phenomenal arising. And as it is the truth with the inquiry, as it is with everything else, that there is a time when it is here, there is a time when it's not here. Since that is the case, that what we are seeking is not to make that stop, because that's just the nature of phenomenal existence. What we are trying to do is to rid ourselves of the belief that we are this phenomenal existence. And not directly by finding a belief and stuffing it out, but indirectly by within this phenomenal existence looking at the ever-present reality again and again. And over time, the life doesn't suddenly become transformed and transcended. That's not the goal either. The life doesn't suddenly become clear and lacking in confusion and focused and all of that. That's not the point either. The life is not the problem. The problem is the belief that you are life. And in the absence of that belief, you will see that you are always, even during the times when you are convinced that you have slipped away from it, you are always only seeing yourself. You are always already seeing yourself. You have always been only seeing yourself and knowing the reality of what you are. So this isn't a practice like other practices in which there's a payoff that is within within the universe of the practice itself. Like if I exercise every day, I can expect that practice will produce results within the universe of the practice, which is the health of the physical body. But self-inquiry isn't like that. It's not something that it is an artifice that is engaged in order to rid yourself of a false belief. That's why it's like medicine and not like spiritual practice. It's something that if I could tell you, if self-inquiry were that every time you think of it, oh, I don't know, say you touch the bottom of your foot with the opposite hand. If that were self-inquiry, and you did that and did that whenever it occurred to you to do so, and whenever you thought of it, there's nothing about that particular practice that you could connect with the whole spiritual environment that surrounds self-investigation. There's nothing in that practice that would suggest to you that you would suddenly that practice would become permanent, or you would think it more often, or you would not distract yourself from it. There's nothing in that practice that would cause that. But since the practice of self-inquiry is the internal action of consciousness, seeing the reality of its nature, it is to be expected that there'll be an expectation that there'll be a payoff within the confines of consciousness. And there is no payoff. The payoff is losing the false belief. There is no payoff to self-inquiry that is within the universe of self-inquiry. What you're seeking, you already are. So nothing is going to happen that's new. What you're seeking is what you already are. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yes, Jim. Looks like, you know, I have to just let the belief breaking away happen and not quite be bothered about it. Looks like that.
Yes, somewhat, but see too that even if you're bothered about it, it doesn't hurt you. When in the midst of being bothered about it, you look for the sense of reality that's behind it all, you find that it is not changed by it. It hasn't been diminished by the being bothered by it. It's not that that we're trying to get rid of. And yes, just be bothered by it. What you said first, just keep doing it. Just keep doing it. For some, like me, it takes a long time. For some, it takes not too long. But persist in this effort to see without understanding or defining or mediation or anything, just to see with your own eyes what you are. And that will slip away and come back and see again. And that'll slip away and come back and see again. And everything will be taken care of. Do you follow that? It's really hard. I'm really happy for this question, because this is the question that underlies all the questions about how do I do this, and how do I know I'm doing it right, and how do I know I'm not doing it wrong. So do you follow me?
Yes, John. Thanks very much. I think we'll continue to keep doing, because I have come across instances when things are very intense within the life, and then I tend to look at who I am. It kind of eases a lot, actually. So I will keep continuing to see and keep looking. John, thanks for that.
I'm happy to hear that. Yes, you're right. These instances will become, they'll smear over the whole life in time. These instances that are now occur from time to time, you will see that over time your separation and alienation from life will disappear, and the whole need to, you'll just see. Yes, you're doing just fine. Please keep it up, and please keep in touch with me and let me know how you are. Thank you very much, Santaraj.
Thanks, John. Will do. I will keep it. Thanks. Bye-bye.
We now have Venki calling from New Bern, North Carolina, I think.
John, can you hear me now?
I can hear you well, Venki. How are you? What can I do for you?
John, I'm going to... This is very strange for me. I always hear your podcast and the online meetings, but I told myself I would... like never ask a question, because, you know, in some way I expected the answer to flash suddenly one day, but that hasn't happened. So I'm going to open with like a simple question, and hopefully it's going to lead to something more pressing that I need to ask you, but I'm not sure what that is. So my opening question is about this practice that you speak about, and I heard you for the first time. I'd never heard of you, and I stumbled upon you on the internet like a few months ago. And the first time I heard you, everything you said kind of shone through so clearly, you know, because I'd been reading up on all this stuff. God knows why I got onto this path of trying to understand who I am or what that is. But something you said about a direct, immediate experience of me that spoke to me directly, and I thought, okay, the search is over. And for 2 weeks, I was like very happy. But nothing fundamentally changed. And I feel that, you know, somehow this choice of looking at ourselves, you know, the practice that you recommend itself is not within our control. Am I right or wrong?
Are you saying that you don't control the practice?
Yes, John, because the thought to look at myself itself does not seem to be in my control. For example, the first time I heard this and I tried to do this the first week, the fourth or fifth day, you know, it was probably the highest priority in my life then, but it wouldn't occur to me, you know, for 6, 7, 8 hours. And it almost felt that the thought itself was not within my control, to the thought that says, okay, now look at yourself, are you here, have you changed, and all that.
Yes, I think I do agree with you, Venki, and I think that's what I am, that's what causes me to suggest that you do so whenever it occurs to you to do so. You know, the occurring to you to do so, you have nothing to say about that. It just appears spontaneously, as does everything else. So I think it may be that once the inquiry is begun, that you have nothing more to say about it, that it runs its own course. But part of that course that it runs is the expenditure of determination and effort on your part to use your natural intelligence to not be fooled, but to be true in the direction in which you're going, to be brushing aside the false as you look for the true. So the point that I'm making here is that it is entirely beside the point whether the inquiry conducts itself or you are in charge of the inquiry. It all feels the same anyway. And it is the inquiry that matters, and not metaphysical questions about how it takes place or how it arises or anything like that. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, John, I'm happy you said that about the metaphysical question, because, you know, I intended the question to be, you know, kind of opening to what I really want to say, and something that you said kind of triggered it off. It's before, you know, in all this, what you call spiritual marathon or whatever, it was actually comforting to not know, you know, to keep fighting intellectually with all these concepts. Of late, that all the intellectual fighting has come to a point where none of these concepts seem concrete at all, John. It's a very scary feeling, and I don't know if you have anything to say about that. It's almost like nothing finally makes any, there's no concreteness to anything, you know. I don't know if you understand me.
Well, yes, I am familiar with what you're speaking about, the sense that there is nothing concrete about anything, and certainly nothing concrete about metaphysical speculations and ideas about reality. And that's a good sign. That's a sign of the weakening of the ground of this belief that you are the one who holds these metaphysical understandings or is involved in this life or needs to know this or any of that stuff. But it's also true that it's not, reality is not a this or that thing. Reality, and this is where we tend to get so confused, is because we think that reality must be existent or inexistent, that it must be concrete or ethereal, that it must be false or true, that it must be separate or not separate, that it must be dual or non-dual. And as may be percolating in your consciousness now, the fact is that there is no either or whatsoever to reality. That all there is, all the ideas, all the concepts, all the utterances, all the disputes, all everything is a failed attempt to say something true. When I say that there is no separate individual, well, some true insight that gives rise to that expression. But as soon as I say it, I know it's false. It's not true. It's not what I'm trying to say. It's not that at all. And it's the same with every spiritual utterance that has ever been spoken or written or sung throughout the ages by the mere fact of uttering these things, we are eliminating everything else. So obviously these ideas that we have about the way things are or the way things should be are by their very nature, well, not concrete or not satisfactory. Do you follow that?
Yes, John, in some ways I understand what you're trying to say, but the fight to get something concrete doesn't go away. Maybe that's not the real fight, real conflict, John. It's probably on a practical level, I don't know if there's a practical level and an impractical level. But in terms of daily living, there's this feeling that will not go away that says there is something that's not rhyming, that's not harmonious, that's not resonant. Maybe that's just a story, I don't know. But that seems to be the more fundamental problem than any understanding of the universe or something like that, because it seems secondary to this person here. The person really wants to be more like harmonious. I think that's what most people are looking for harmony. And I think that seems to be the more, or I don't know about most people, but at least that's what I see. It's an awareness, or I don't know the words, but it's the recognition inside me that there is something that is not in tune. I don't know if I made myself clear.
Yes, of course, and the desire for harmony or any of the other ways that we can speak about this, the desire for harmony certainly is present in the individual. It's present in you. And the certainty that harmony is missing is also present and obvious. And so what we do normally to try to resolve this disharmonious condition is to find something to do with our lives or our thoughts or our desires or our mind or our whatever in order to bring about harmony. And what I tell you is that the feeling of disharmony need not go away, that the feeling of disharmony is in perfect harmony with reality. That the problem is not the feeling of disharmony. The problem is not the effort to try to find harmony. The problem that creates the appearance of disharmony is the false belief that I am this disharmonious thing, and that nothing whatsoever that I do within this disharmonious life can solve that problem. The only thing that can solve that problem is the truth, tasted again and again as an antidote to the lie that I am at stake in this life and that something needs to happen in this life for me to find harmony. The problem is not anything that's happening in the life. It's not any of the seeking after harmony, the failing to find harmony, or any of that. The problem is the belief I am this life. And the only thing that can be done about that is to continue the inquiry, continue the effort to taste the truth, not some big metaphysical truth, but the ever-present, ordinary, simple presence of you, which is never absent. Not to gain new understanding, but to rid yourself of the idea that you are this disharmonious life, and that something that happens in this life hurts you or helps you, because it doesn't. If you look and see, you will see that in all of the yearning for harmony, you are not hurt by it. You are not affected by it. You are already in total harmony. So, do you follow me?
I think so, John. It's wonderful how you take all the different questions that people ask you and you boil it down to this one fundamental question, and probably that's something that I've been fighting so long, because you know, you have all these things like there's going to be some great event or something like that. But I think I see clearly what you're saying is that the only thing is the truth. And like somebody else asked in the meeting today, is that when the anxiety and the fear is gone, you know that the work is done. And I think you have the most unique perspective on this thing, John, and I wish you all the best.
I wish you all the best, Venki, and please, please continue the inquiry and let me know from time to time how you're doing. I'd love to hear from you. If you write to me, remind me of this conversation, so, because I'm very bad with names, so remind me of what we're talking about. But I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear how you're doing. Okay?
All right, John, thank you very much. Have a good evening. Bye.
Bye.
We now have Brian calling from Dallas, Texas.
Well, hello, Brian.
Hello there, John. How are you?
I'm quite well, and you?
Oh, I'm very well, thank you. I have a trivial question for you. I'm not entirely sure it's of any importance whatsoever, if any questions are ever of any importance, but I'll give you it anyway if you've got time.
Okay.
Sometimes when sitting or just self-inquiring, I don't know if that's a verb, but we will try it out. When I first go into it, it's like relaxing into the fact that I exist. I start to twitch and shake. It's always unexpected, and sometimes it's quite violent almost. I don't twitch in any other aspects of everyday life, and I just wonder, is this something you've ever heard of before?
I think that I think that there was a time, I could be making this up, but I think there was a time when I was in great stress, when the need to find resolution was immense to me. I think there was a time when I had the experience of quite a few physical symptoms like that, but I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised. Does it cause you any distress? Is it painful or disturbing to you?
It's not painful and it's not disturbing, but it's always surprising. It always catches me. I never know it's coming, and I only know it when it's finished. It's like a violent twitch. My shoulder usually goes. I seem to remember reading somewhere that when Ramana first asked Papaji to self-inquire, he reported symptoms of shaking, and that's how he knew Ramana was telling the truth. But that's the only other time I've ever heard it commented on.
Well, I know that shaking is not unknown in the spiritual realm, and the body itself is a thought, actually a whole bunch of thoughts going together into a comprehensible idea of something, a body, and the inquiry itself is reaching to the most profound assumptions about our nature. It is really going to the most profound, the deepest assumptions about our nature. And I would think that it would be expected that there would be some shaking, whether it manifested physically or not, that there is a shaking actually going on. And it wouldn't be so surprising that it manifested in the body. All I can say is shake, enjoy it.
Oh, I like that. As I say, it doesn't bother me at all. Sometimes I find it quite amusing. I just wonder if other people had experienced it. But no problem. Thank you very much for indulging me, sir. And keep up the good work.
Oh, I'm always happy to hear from you, Brian. And maybe we'll see you sometime.
I would like that very much.
Okay. Enjoy yourself. Bye.
Now we have Dion calling from Birmingham in the United Kingdom.
Hello, Dion. Apparently your microphone isn't working. I'm sorry. I'd love to speak with you. Okay, well, Dion, I am very sorry that we were unable to speak today, but I'm sure the opportunity will arise again in one forum or another. I guess we're done here. This has been quite a magnificent meeting. And every time I come to this venue, it takes me by surprise to see all of you from so many places, and all of you here, always here. I can't ever convey to you my gratitude for your willingness to listen and consider the radical suggestion of self-inquiry as a means to put an end to the warfare in your life. I am very, very aware of how strange the suggestion may be, and how unlike most spiritual offerings this offering is. I am very much aware of the honesty that it takes to be able to consider the possibility of abandoning the search for a solution in your life and turning your attention to the search for the reality of what you are. I can never tell you how grateful I am for your willingness to do so. and your willingness to come together like this and talk to me straight and honest and straightforwardly about what you see, about what you don't understand, about what you have received, about what you are still struggling with. Talk to me in this venue where we all get to benefit from our consideration and reflection on these matters. I am so grateful. I am your servant and at your feet in all ways, in all times. So thank you for this meeting. Thank you for your presence. Thank you for your willingness.